Hello, and welcome to the Written World Podcast. I'm Kylie.
And I'm Izzy, and today we're going to talk about Velocity Weapon by Megan E. O'Keefe.
This book fulfills the sci-fi line on our 2022 reading challenge, which is number 14 if you're reading along.
Yep, and so I'm going to read the description from Goodreads so you guys can get an idea of what the vibe is. Sanda and Beren Greave were siblings destined for greatness. A high-flying sergeant, Sanda has the skills to take down any enemy combatant. Beren is a savvy politician who aims to use his new political position to prevent conflict from escalating to total destruction. However, on a routine maneuver, Sanda loses consciousness when her gunship is blown out of the sky. Instead of finding herself in friendly hands, she awakens 230 years later on a deserted enemy warship controlled by an AI who calls himself Barrow. The war is lost. The star system is dead. Ada Prime and its rival Icarian have wiped each other from the universe. Now, separated by time and space, Sanda and Beren must fight to put things right.
There it is. And this is a long one. Probably one of the longer books we've read on the show. Not the longest, though. We've done a few bigger ones, but it's over 500 pages. And I don't know, we've read it over a somewhat long period of time. So, forgive us if we skip some details, but we've got the gist.
Absolutely. There's also a lot of details in this book that change frequently.
True.
Meaning we can't talk about a lot or else it would spoil some of the plot twists.
True, true. What was your first impression of this one?
My first impression was that I really liked the one of the main reasons that I picked it up was I really liked the voice of, like, Sanda's voice. Sort of like the way that she was written and the kind of, like, energy that she had there. Yeah, that was mostly my first impression.
I thought it was a really good hook. Like, I like how it started off right into the center of something very jarring. She wakes up on an enemy ship. Yeah, so that got me. I was convinced. Like, you read that, I think, line to me when we were deciding what book to read. And I was like, yeah, I'm sold. I did think, I listened to this as an audiobook, as I usually do. And I did find the names a little bit confusing in an audio format. Beren and Barrow sounded way too similar to me, to the point where I thought that Barrow, like, I had to keep re-listening at the very beginning because I thought Barrow was like a nickname for her brother because they sound so similar, and I was just very confused. So that kind of clouded my first impression. It was just kind of weird, but I mean, like, seeing them written down, they're pretty dissimilar, but I just remember, like, I remember reading a blog post or an article somewhere, like, years ago. I was probably 10 or 11 when I was writing a novel, and it was talking about, like, naming your characters and how you should name them things. You should keep the names all pretty different unless it's, like, intentional, and they should even, like, sound different. Like, and the example they used was Craig and Greg because they're spelled entirely differently except for the last letter, well, and the R, but anyway, they're spelled very differently, sound the same when you say them out loud. So that's just what this had me thinking about, but it's fine, you know, I do not fault the author for this small thing.
Yeah, I think that it's funny that you mentioned that, though, because throughout the book, Sanda calls Beren her brother, Little B, and then calls Barrow, the spaceship, Big B. So,
yeah, that was weird.
Yeah, I think there's, like, a lot of parallels. I mean, perhaps Sanda's, like, projecting, like, onto Barrow this sort of, like, brotherhood-ish kind of
thing. Missed it because I was confused. Yeah, that's a good point.
I have a lot of thoughts about that, but that's for later.
All right. Okay, so what did you like about this one?
Okay, so what I liked about it was, I think the writing style actually was my favorite part of it. It was sort of like casual, but still very descriptive and immersive. I thought that each character had a pretty distinct voice. Actually, one of my favorite characters was Callie Mara, who she only has like an interlude like twice, where you kind of get her from her point of view, but I feel like the way she was written was really unique. I thought that that was well done, that the each of the characters that were speaking had their own like feel to them, which I feel like sometimes doesn't happen.
I agree with that for sure, and I think that was brought out very well in the audiobook. Like the actor did a really good job of differentiating voices and making it very clear, even though I was confused about the names. I agree with that. I liked all the twists and turns. I thought they were fun. I was really thinking almost the entire time I was reading, like, I want to watch this as a movie. I would love to see this play out on screen. And it just seems like it could be a very, very cinematic. I feel like it's well suited for adaptation is what I'm trying to say. I thought the question too of like, you know, at its very simplest form, like, are robots people too? Because they discuss the issue of creating sentient AI, like AI that has feelings and emotions and memories and things like that. So I thought that question was very interesting, and I was here to see it raised in the book.
Yeah, that's not really something I had like spent time thinking about, and I feel like the way that the book presented it was very challenging, but like in a good way.
Yeah, I second that.
Yeah, because Barrow is not like the exemplar of a well-adjusted AI or like human adjacent like figure, not that any of us are, but he has a lot of flaws, a lot of which some of them you can't really overlook because they're kind of magnanimous. So I think that like that in conjecture with the, okay, what responsibility do human beings have to like manage or even to like, how do we treat something that like we've brought into this world or that we've sort of given life, and should we be giving things life? You know, that kind of like line of questioning I think was presented in a really dynamic and complex way.
Yeah, I agree. What didn't you like?
On the same note, I think that what I didn't like necessarily was that complexity got a little bit lost on Sanda. I felt like her relationship with, without trying to like spoil too much, her relationship with Barrow becomes a little bit too simplistic when it should have been more complex. Like, it was complex as like a reader, but then like Sanda herself would like simplify things in a way that didn't really match what she had been through and experienced.
That is so well said.
Thank you. She joked a lot about having Stockholm Syndrome, and if she actually had Stockholm Syndrome, which it seemed like she did, like, I don't think that's something that she would joke about. Like, it just, things like that, where it was just kind of off.
Yeah, I agree. It's like the issue was presented as, like, the complex one as that it is, and then when it came to specific characters, not really explored that way, which, you know, sometimes that's what happens in real life, too.
Yeah, yep. Some people use humor to cover up their discomfort.
Indeed, indeed. Speaking of that, I felt in general the sense of humor of the book was cool and quirky and fun. Like, I laughed. it was so funny, I even laughed. Yeah, I don't know. I liked the voice. I liked the sense of humor. I did feel like the, like, humans versus robot jokes got a little bit old. I'm like, yes, haha, humans are not perfect. It, like, there's the running joke, like a character apologizes to the spaceship for, like, saying a fact that could, I guess, be offensive if it was a person. And the ship Barrow says, I cannot be offended by something that is simply a fact. And the human character replies, like, humans have a long history of being offended by facts. I'm like, haha, yeah. Like, by that point in the book, I was like, okay, yes, this is a fact. This would be a fun moment in a movie. This would fit really well in a movie as, like, a one-liner. Or I guess it, anyway, I don't even know what a one-liner is. But you know what I'm saying. I feel like this would fit very well in a movie. But when I've already read, like, 400 pages of jokes like that sprinkled in, I'm like, okay, yes, let's keep going.
Yeah, similarly, I think that, like, there were a lot of just, like, sort of cliche, like, little phrases and stuff that were just sort of, like, thrown in for, like, for humor or for explanation, which at times, like, just felt a little lazy to me. Not saying that the writer's being lazy or anything, definitely not. Very well-written book. But just that, I don't know, sort of in those moments where, like, I would have appreciated maybe something, like, more original for the, like, weightiness or for the way that something's described versus just something where it's like, okay.
Like, can you think of any examples?
I don't know if I can. This is bad. I should have, like, written down ones that I thought.
That's okay.
But no, I couldn't think of any. It was just sort of in the moment where you're, like, small things that are, like, oh, that's a turn of phrase that, like, I hear a lot when describing this thing. And it's, like, okay.
Yes, like the trite wordings.
Yeah.
I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that. And it was weird to see that in, like, such a, like, far future world. It felt kind of, like, incongruent to, like, use all these colloquial turns of phrase in a very future place.
Yeah, I think definitely when you, like, as an author, when you employ stuff like that, you have to be, like, really intentional about it, because if not, it can sort of, like, draw the reader out of that, like, immersion. Like, they would make references sometimes to movies or to, and, like, little phrases like that kind of thing. And I would sort of, like, take a step back and be like, oh, like, they still remember those things, or, like, that media has lasted that long, like.
Right, yes. I saw a lot of reviews saying things like that, too.
What was it on your can't pick it up, can't put it down scale?
I think that parts of it were very compelling, but it was just, like, so very long. That those things, like, balanced each other out. So I'm gonna put it, like, just right in the middle out of 5.
I agree, because there were times, like, I feel like I kind of struggled with this book just because I was trying to read it quickly, but also, with all the twists and turns, yeah, but also deeply, and with all the twists and turns, it sort of, it keeps you hooked, but, like, there's also a lot of time where not things like that aren't happening, so it just felt, like, long. And when so many twists and turns happen, like, those can feel long too, where it's just sort of like, okay, you think you're in a stable position. Like, honestly, I thought the book could have ended, like, halfway through.
Exactly. And you, like, look at how much is left. It's like when you're, like, at the beginning of a TV show and everything gets resolved, you're like, that wasn't the primary issue, something's gonna come up.
Yeah.
Feelings about the characters.
I actually thought the characterization was one of the really strong things about this book. I think that everyone was pretty unique, had their own voice sort of thing. I do think that the character relationships within each other sometimes were a little forced. I'm talking mostly about Thomas Kepko and Sanda. They sort of explain that in the book and try to, like, dissuade the reader from thinking that it's forced for reasons that you would find out if you read the book. But the fact that they're pointing them out very, like, hyper-specifically, like, almost makes me feel like it's more forced than it actually was. So, I know that's very vague, but spoilers!
Yeah. I agree that the characterization was really nicely done. I really like the relationship between Baron and Sanda, though. I felt like that one was pretty strong. I do agree with what you're saying, though. And, yeah, And in terms of just, like, characterization itself, Tomas, I don't know, they said Tomas in the audiobook, but it could also be Thomas. I don't know, it doesn't really matter. I mean, I guess it matters, but we don't know. Anyway, he kept me guessing, which was cool. I was really never sure about him, and not even for a sec.
No, that was always really good. I did listen to the audiobook for a little bit, and I thought the actor did a really good job. But Barrow's voice was so annoying. He sounded like a 12-year-old boy who was, like, that, yeah, like, stereotypic nerd with, like, really big glasses and, like, an 80s nasally movie. Yeah. I'm like... Yeah. I was like, oh, like,
That did get grating after a while.
Yeah. The way he voiced female characters was also annoying, but...
Yeah, I could see that.
But, like, he did a great job. Like, I'm just, like, I don't know, I'm picky about those things. And he kind of, like, tried to hyper-feminize his voice, and it just didn't really fit the character that he was talking for, Yeah, I don't know.
I think I'm becoming less sensitive to those things because I read so many audiobooks, so it's interesting to hear from you as someone who doesn't as much, because, like, looking back, I totally know what you mean. Who would you recommend this book to?
I would recommend this book to anyone who is looking to enter into sci-fi, like, sort of maybe for the first time. I saw a couple reviews where people were kind of complaining that this wasn't, like, super hard sci-fi, and honestly, that's more equitable for me. I don't need super hard science. Like, I'm really here for, like, the whimsicalness of space, so... but even this wasn't as whimsical, I think, as I would like it to be. So if you're, like, very, like, adventure-oriented, very kind of, like, science, technology-oriented, but also really, like, strong characterization, I think this is good for you.
Yeah, I saw a lot of that, too. Like, there's not a ton of hard science. Like, the author kind of puts ideas and, like, things that exist in this universe out there, but doesn't, like, really bother to explain any of the science behind it. But yeah, I agree. I was fine with that. I'm like, just tell me what they do. I don't need the why. I'll be fine.
Yeah. And I don't know, as a person who mostly enjoys fantasy, I like science fiction and fantasy that, like, explains what's going on, and it has, like, very, like, concrete world-building elements, but you don't necessarily need to give me all of that information, that, like, very scientific hard fact information, because I'm fine with it being whimsical. I'm fine with it being like, yeah, this is science and it exists. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, okay, that's what I would have done if I wrote a sci-fi. There's no way.
Same.
There's no way.
Like, so in this world, things work like this because I said so.
Exactly.
I think I would recommend this to anyone who, well, if you like science fiction and you like a good twist, definitely pick this one up. I think also probably if you liked space opera and are looking for something, like, kind of in that universe but a little more on the science fiction side, this would be a good next step. Maybe not one right after the other. I feel like that would be a lot, but, you know, sometime. Overall, was it what you expected?
No. But that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Go on.
Oh, I guess I just this is a me thing. No, it's okay. This is a me thing specifically. I read a book, like, 2 years ago with a main character. It's a trilogy. The third book's coming out in December. And the main character I felt akin to so much that, like, I look for her in all other books. So when I picked up this book and I read, like, sort of Sanda's dialogue, I was like, yes, she sounds a lot like this other character. And I really miss this other character, but, like, don't want to read this book again right now. And... she wasn't. I mean, she was in some ways, but, like, not to the same extent. And that's okay, because she's an individual, and she's her own character. And that's fine, but I guess I was looking for that very, like, deep, like, connectedness that I felt with that character in a different character, basically, and that didn't really happen, and that's okay. I guess no one can replace her in my heart.
I understand that a lot. I feel like I tend to feel it with, like, stories more than specific characters, but, like, you start reading something that reminds you of something else, and you're, like, mad when it's not that other thing. You're like, this thing already exists. Like, it's its own thing, and it's good. I want it to be the same thing.
Yeah.
I feel like it was mostly what I expected. I think it was a little bit lighter, which is kind of interesting, because it's, like, I don't know, they're pretty high stakes in this book, but, like, the tone overall, I feel like, was lighter than what I expected, and, like, I was trying to think about the best way to say this, but less, like, ostentatious in tone and style. Like, I thought, like, the first word that came to my mind was pretentious, but, like, that has, like, more negative connotations than ostentatious. Like, I guess I just, like, expected it to be a little bit more high-minded or something. No, that's not what I mean. I don't know. Ostentatious is what I settled on for a reason. And I like that it was a little bit more down to earth.
Yeah, I felt like this was very, like, accessible, like, science fiction.
Yes.
That, yeah. And it's considered, like, a space opera. I think because of its, like, high fantasy nature of having, like, multiple POVs and sort of thing, but not being high fantasy, obviously. But don't quote me on that, because I'm not super knowledgeable about sci-fi.
Gotta get a sci-fi expert on here. Mm. Yeah, and then how did you feel? So this is I believe it's a trilogy at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think? Would you read a sequel or threequel?
I don't think so. I think that it would be worthwhile to read the rest, just because there's a lot of questions left unanswered. But I think at the end of the first book, I was kind of tired.
At the very end, I thought for a second, like, oh yeah, like, I want to read the sequel. And then I'm like, no, you don't. You want to find out what happens next. You don't want a whole other story, which happens to me a lot with sequels. Like, I want to know how they go about their daily life after this whole thing happened. But I don't want another thing to happen. Like, I want to see their ordinary lives. I don't want to go through a whole other epic story. And I get that some people do. And that's just not me. I just, like, I spend so much time with these characters, I would like to see what their lives look like after this. But that's not usually how sequels go.
Yeah, and I got the same feeling while reading it, too. It was like, oh, I spend so much time with these people, I just want to see them be happy together, or, like, just live their lives and not be going through, like, all of this stuff. But it's clear that they're just going to continue to go through all of this stuff, and we cannot have nice things. So it's... which is fine.
With more books comes more stuff.
Yeah, I don't know if I can handle more stuff.
Yeah, I think not for me. I would maybe read, like, the first... I would probably not do this, but if I were to read any of it, I'd read, like, the first couple chapters to see, like, what's up? How have you guys been?
Yeah, what's going on?
But I'm not going into the whole thing. Hey guys, just wanted to check in, see if everything's fine. Yeah. All right, anything else to add about this one?
No, that's about it for me. Oh, wait, no. Wait, there's a third POV character.
Oh my god, yeah, that's right.
That feels almost useless until the end-ish. The book isn't even marketed with her as a POV character. Like, it's only marketed as Sanda and Beren, like, nobody else. There's a third person.
Okay, this is funny. So I, like, finished this book probably, I don't know, like, a while ago. And so I was, like, reading up on it again today, trying to, like, gather my thoughts and write everything down. And I saw something about this character, Jules. I'm like, who's Jules? I don't remember Jules. What do you mean it was in her POV sometime? What? I don't remember this at all. I literally almost texted you being like, yo, who's Jules again? But I didn't, because I did my research and I figured it out. But everything I read said, like, it was pretty clear, and I definitely didn't, like, have the, like, wherewithal to think this while I was reading it, but, like, that it was pretty clear that she was there to set up the future stories and didn't serve much purpose in this one, except, like, to tie things together a little bit at the end. I guess that's a spoiler. Oh, well.
It's okay. People don't know how.
But I agree, that was wacky.
Yeah, and I don't know, I'm not really a fan of, like, just set up characters. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
I feel like if you're gonna have a character that you want to set up for, like, an arc later, then, like, give them something that's a little bit more tangible or, like, a role that makes more sense in the first book. Because she just sort of, like, felt like she was there and her friends were there and then they weren't there and they were doing other stuff.
Yeah. I want to say, like, yes, like, you should, if you're going to add a character in, like, you have to, you know, you got to, like, make them a whole person. They can't just be a device. But also, like, there are no rules. But also, I don't know, maybe that is a rule.
Yeah, I just felt like a lot of her, like, her personality and her, like, backstory and, like, sort of the things that would have connected us to her was just sort of told to us. It wasn't...
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, which, like...
They were like, this book is already too long.
Mm-hmm. So at that point, I feel like maybe the connections that she made could have been made, like, some other way.
Yeah, that's fair. Shall we go into what are you reading right now?
If sure.
You have any seconds other than schoolwork?
Yes. I mean, I can actually say what I'm reading for schoolwork and what I'm reading for fun.
Okay.
So I'm reading Francine J. Harris's Here Is the Sweet Hand, which is a poetry book and for school. And I am reading Sword of Destiny, which is the second short story collection in the Witcher series.
Those going well?
Yeah. The Francine J. Harris's book is very queer, which is super fun for me. Talks about lots of good things. Yeah, I'm not very far in.
Okay.
And then I'm also not very far in into Sword of Destiny either, but I really, like, love the Witcher series for some reason. I feel, like, oddly very akin to it.
Oh, nice.
Couldn't really explain why, but...
I am reading Hamnet by Maggie O'Farrell.
How is it so far?
It's really good. I've been reading it for a long time just because it's, like, my bedtime book, so I always fall asleep. But I'm probably, like, 3/4 through it now. It's very good. I'm very excited to watch the... whatever screen adaptation it's been turned into. I think it's on HBO. It's a movie or a series or something. Or it's going to be. Ooh, should have looked into this a little bit more. But if you don't know, Hamnet is about the... Well, Hamnet is the name of one of William Shakespeare's children. And this really follows Shakespeare and his wife and, like, really all of their children through some tough times in England in Shakespeare's life. And it's... I don't know that I've ever read anything that's written quite like this. It's very captivating. It's very, like, atmospheric. Yeah, I'm a fan.
I'm gonna add that again to my list of things to read. Not that I need to purchase more books. I just bought 2 more books, so, like, no. But...
Tis the life.
I think if I, like, purchase another book, it's just not gonna be good. And then here comes Goodreads recommending stuff that I can get out of here.
Hey, we love a library.
We do love a library. I need to, like, actually get into borrowing books from a library because I'm weirdly, like, possessive about books where, like, I'm like, I must own you. And then I own all of these books, and then I read them once, and sometimes I don't like them, and it's like, fuck, well, I just paid, like, $20 for this book, and I don't like it, but I read it, and, like, now what? Yeah. And then you feel more obligated to finish it.
True. True. I do quit a lot more books now. I actually started keeping a list of the books I quit just to like see what it looks like. You know, like how many do I actually quit, and what is there a pattern?
Oh, that'd be really interesting.
Yeah. Let's see what's on it right now.
Ooh.
It's only a couple, probably.
New segment. What books have you quit?
Books I quit. It's not a digital list. It's a real life pen and paper list, like my book list. So far, The Loneliest Girl in the Universe. That was a YA book, I think. I had like, yeah. So I have had Scribd since I was 16. And so recently I like went back to the beginning of things I've saved, like since I first had the app. And have been, like, reading things that still look kind of interesting to me. So I'm like, I wonder what 16-year-old Kylie was into. It's pretty much the same stuff. But with a little bit more tolerance for YA than I have now. And anyway, Loneliest Girl in the Universe was not it, apparently. They both die at the end. Oh, my God.
Oh.
That's the name of another book.
That's never fun.
No, that's not what happened. It's the name of the book. It's another book. They both die at the end.
Oh.
And it's, like, about...
I was like, oh, wait, I know that book.
Yeah, and, like, there was a lot of hype about it, but I don't know. I really, truly could not read much of it at all. It was kind of unbearable for me. I lost my page. Then we have Dear Girl, which that was a book... That was a poetry book that I found... like on a stoop in Carroll Gardens, and it was pretty, and it had like a note from the author in it, so it was like given to someone personally, and I guess they gave it away. It was poetry. I could have finished it so easily in like a couple of hours. I couldn't. It was so like trite. So anyway, that's what I've quit recently.
I think there's a baby screaming outside, and it sounds like a goblin. And I was just concerned. Happy Halloween, when all of your children turn into goblins, if they weren't already.
Happy Halloween. Speaking of which, do you want to tell us what we're reading next?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So next we're reading Carrie by Stephen King. Which is... Drum roll, please. Number 18 on our reading list.
One day we'll learn to keep the list up while we talk.
Oh, one day.
Not today, though.
Not today.
I have too many screens happening already. I can't.
What's my excuse? Sorry.
You're focused. You're present in this conversation. That's your excuse. So we're going to read Carrie. And then maybe I'll watch the movie. I don't know about you, but I feel like I could watch the movie. It's a movie as well as a musical, right?
Yeah, it's two movies. There's one from, like... There's the original, and then there was a newer one from 2013.
That's right. Okay. So, yeah, we're going to read that just in time for spooky season, and we'll be back to share our thoughts.
Absolutely. And if you haven't watched Over the Garden Wall in the meantime, have you even lived your life yet?
True. I'm actually prepping a Over the Garden Wall Halloween costume right now.
Who are you going to be?
Greg. And my friend's going to be Wirt.
That's so cute.
One day I will have, like, an Over the Garden Wall, like, party, and everyone will be a character, and I'll be, like, Adelaide, or, like, the school teacher, or somebody, like, well, you know, one of those more, like, niche characters, but, it's just gonna be the two of us, so we have to be easily recognized. I got my overalls in the mail the other day. I ordered, like, two or three different pair, because I wasn't sure what would come in time and what would fit right, so I just ordered a bunch, so, but yeah, I'm excited for that. Oh, well, I gotta watch it this fall, too.
Please. Please do. I just went through, like, I binged it with my girlfriend in one night again.
It's a fall necessity.
It is. It really is. If I had to dress up as a character, I would definitely dress up either as Beatrice or as one of the pumpkins from Pottsfield.
That's good. Yeah, Beatrice is fun, too. I've seen some really cool, like, cosplay dresses of her human self.
Ah, I want to, like, see that. because that would be really cute.
Oh my gosh, I actually just bought myself a Pottsfield. This was my birthday present to myself because my birthday is this week. It's a
Happy birthday!
Thanks. It's a sweatshirt that says like Pottsfield Harvest Festival, and it's got like a cool, like, you know, the art style of the show design. I'm so excited. I hope it comes this week.
That's so cute. Where did you order it from?
From Etsy. And I was trying, there's definitely a lot of people ripping off this design, and I was really trying hard to find the original person and like give them my money, and I think I did, but I'm honestly not super sure. So I don't know, just do your research when you're getting them. There are some really cool designs though. It took me a long time to decide.
Oh yeah. Lady Epi on Instagram does a lot of like her own printing and stuff, and she does a lot of over the garden wall things.
Lady Emmy?
Epi, E-P-I. She does, she also does Our Flag Means Death and ACOTAR and a bunch of other fun things.
Cool. I'm following her with the show account. All right, I think that is all for today. We will see you next time on the Written World Podcast. Thank you for listening.
Yep. Keep reading, everyone.